it's in the breaking, we come unbound. And it's in the giving, we are found. Yeah, you can barely change.
Welcome to A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, a podcast dedicated to the telling of authentic stories and the sharing of insightful wisdom, exploring science and spirituality, medicine and Mother Nature. No topic is off limits when it comes to growing our personal understanding and supporting our collective well-being. With your host, Dr. Rob Abbott, a family medicine resident practicing spiritually focused and evolutionarily informed functional medicine, we hope to nourish your being so that you can flourish in whatever the moment has called for you to do.
And I know you try.
In episode 27 of A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, we turn our gazes inward and talk all things functional when it comes to eye health with entrepreneurial optometrist Dr. Travis Ziegler. Dr. Ziegler graduated in 2010 from the Ohio State University College of Optometry and is the founder of iLove, an organization and business whose mission is to end preventable blindness. Travis and his wife, Dr. Jenna Ziegler, use the profits from iLove to fund free and low-cost clinics in South Carolina and Jamaica. They also started a charity called the I Love Cares Foundation, which provides exams, glasses, and sunglasses for those in need, free education, and scholarships for students that align with their mission. In this conversation, Travis describes his framework for understanding eye disease, seeing systemic chronic inflammation as a much greater contribution to the health of our eyes than we classically would think. Travis then shares his revolutionary business model, turning the classic optometry clinic on its head, in order to create a flourishing online business and education platform that has enabled him and his wife to fund larger-scale mission trips to provide eye exams to those who otherwise would go without. We explore the evolution and success of new businesses driven by foundational missions and core values as compared to the simple pursuit of growing the size of one's business. We then get back into the medical space as Travis offers his insights into some of the most common conditions he sees affecting the eye and how he seeks to help his patients heal. We explore the role of a plant-based diet, supplements such as fish oil, the integration of regular eyelid cleaning, and the protection of one's eyes from blue light as some of the most effective and promising ways to prevent many of the common chronic eye conditions we see today. Jumping from dry eye and cataracts to disrupted sleep from blue light exposure and myopia, Travis offers so many practical insights into how we can effectively keep our eyes and our entire bodies healthy as we age. Please check out the links on the podcast page to explore Travis's business, his foundation, and many of the products he offers, including his variety of more fashionable and functionally designed blue light blocking glasses. Having searched at length to find functionally minded clinicians speaking about eye health, I feel so blessed to have found Travis and his wife and to share this conversation with you all. I really hope you enjoy the show. Well, Travis, thank you for joining me today for a podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
I was really, you know, fortunate to come across you very recently and was just really astonished by your work and thought it'd be perfect to have a conversation to share with folks, both sort of clinicians and just everyone else in the population interested in eye health. So would love for you to kind of start and just let people know a little bit about you. And yeah, why are we having this conversation today?
Yeah, so I am from a little town in Ohio called Bryan, Ohio, and I lived there until about the year of 2003 when I graduated. And I went to the Ohio State University for undergrad, and then I went there for optometry school as well. So I am an OD, a doctorate of optometry, and I practiced in Columbus, Ohio for about 5 years until about 2015, and I got the entrepreneur itch and wanted to start my own practice and didn't really find anything that I was going to buy into in Columbus. So we ended up buying two practices down in South Carolina and moving down here where we are currently. And we've been here for about 3 years. We had two practices down here and we just sold one last June or just a couple months ago in June. And we just have the one practice now. My wife is also an optometrist and we started an online business at the same time. And we're full-time in that online eye wellness business and part-time practicing now. And we kind of take a different approach to eye care. And we can literally say that because we don't follow Western medicine as much as we used to because of some events that happened in our lives. And we practice more of an Eastern medicine approach of figuring out the cause and what's pretty much causing the disease rather than just kind of curing it. So, or just covering up a symptom. And so I love the medical system that we have here, but Western medicine is only one form of medicine. And even what you're learning at med school is just one form of medicine that's out there. There's lots of different other ones. And that's what we're kind of exploring now is we're Western medicine trained, but now we're actually exploring more of the Eastern side just because it gives you more of a broad view of what medicine is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just sitting here completely in agreement with you. I mean, we share that same passion for true wellness and trying to get to the root cause behind someone's suffering and an illness. And it's not to, you know, demean our backgrounds, our training in traditional settings, but it's realizing it's not the full story. And perhaps in a lot of cases, it's not really insightful into what's going on. And so was just also really grateful that to hear your story going into, you know, optometry. And, you know, before we maybe get into that, you know, I think it's curious. I always kind of joke, I wasn't one of the kids who grew up saying, yes, I want to be a doctor. Or, even new medicine was on my radar. I know a lot of kids grow up and they're like, yeah, I want to be a firefighter or a police officer or an astronaut. And I'm guessing in your childhood, you perhaps weren't saying, I'm going to be an optometrist. But wanted to at least let you, you know, share a story or, you know, perhaps where did the seed get planted for you to pursue this path and want to restore wellness, starting with the eye?
It's not as exciting as you might think, but it's not something that, yeah, you're right. I didn't say I wanted to be an eye doctor, but I knew I wanted to be a doctor of some form. And I was actually looking at three different careers, and one was OBGYN and being an in vitro doctor, which is funny because of the reason we started looking at Eastern medicine is because we actually were pretty much told that we had to do IVF to get pregnant or we weren't going to be able to get pregnant. And then we explored Eastern medicine, acupuncture, herbals, and that's what actually got us pregnant. And we got pregnant from that, which kind of shifted our mind from Western medicine to Eastern medicine. And that's kind of the story behind our mind shift. And I was actually, that was one of the interests that I had in undergrad was to be an OBGYN doing in vitro. And wow. The other one was optometry. And then the other one was veterinary. And the reason I liked those three doctors is because they're happy doctors. You're giving people life, literally, with IVF. You're giving people vision, which with eyes. And then with, I mean, animals are just cool. So you get to play with dogs all day. So
yeah.
The reason I picked optometry was because when I was an undergrad, my uncle is actually an optometrist right beside Ohio State's campus. And I worked for him just to have a job in undergrad and ended up falling in love with his lifestyle and just the lifestyle of an optometrist in general. It's a very slow pace, or it can be fast paced if you want it to be, but it's a happy doctor. You're giving people vision. There is bad news just like in any profession, but for the most part, you're giving people vision, and that's why I went into it. And that's kind of just the reason I chose optometry as a profession.
Wow. Well, man, thank you for sharing that story. I find that fascinating. You know, I look at a couple of friends who went down sort of the veterinary route. My brother's girlfriend, she's actually, you know, a veterinary technician and does so much in caring for animals. And we joke all the time. I was like, your job is so much harder than mine. Like, I take care of one species. You're taking care of, you know, hundreds.
Exactly.
And, you know, I say I didn't really have a vision of wanting to get into medicine when I was younger, but the first person I ever interacted with when it came to health and medicine was I saw a pediatric ophthalmologist because I had terrible cross-eyed vision and, you know, was sitting 2 feet from the TV. And so went in very young. I was like 3 or 4 and yes, was very, very farsighted. And so very early on was wearing glasses and was very lucky. I didn't, have to have anything much beyond that and did very well, but she was such a wonderful person. And I remember seeing, you know, there's two optometrists in the same clinic, and sort of later on I would go and kind of get my vision checked and when I was wearing contacts and do visits with them, and just such happy people. And so I completely agree with you, kind of seeing that space and being drawn to, I want to pursue a profession pursue a profession where people are joyful and enjoy their job, which isn't necessarily the case in other areas of medicine, but I'm making a generalization, but I'm glad you chose to go into optometry. And then, I mean, I'm guessing where did your wife come along? Was she, you know, before all this, or, you know, did you meet each other there? I'm just kind of curious.
The meeting is actually a vulgar story that is not suitable for kids, but no, I'm just, it's a, we were actually, I was a first year in optometry school at Ohio State, and she was a senior at Michigan. And if anybody's from the Midwest, they know, or if they like sports in general, they know that the Michigan-Ohio State rivalry is the biggest rivalry in all of sports. And rivalry, I can't even talk, but it's comparable to the Yankees-Red Sox. And the year was 2006, and we were number one in the nation. They were number two in the nation. It was the last game of the season, so she came down for the game, and we actually met at a bar. And the reason we met is because I had a vulgar Ohio State shirt on.
Yeah, and of course you did.
it was against Michigan, and she went to Michigan. So she came up to me and said, I got to get a picture with your shirt on because it's disgusting, and I go to Michigan, so we just have to take a picture together. And so we did. Ended up getting on Facebook, and then her classmate from high school was one of my roommates who wasn't there that night. And so we ended up connecting again. And that night she was telling me, or she was asking me what I did. And I was just like, well, I'm a first year in optometry school at Ohio State. And she goes, I'm actually coming here next year for optometry school. And I was like,
joke.
Well, wow. I'll see you the next year. And we started dating, and that was 10 years ago.
Man, that's such a cool story. Oh my gosh. I love it. And I'm very, you know, I'm not from the Midwest, but lived for 4 years, during med school. One of my roommates went to Michigan, and he was born in Ohio. So, learned quite a bit about that rivalry, and he tried to indoctrinate me with all sorts of terrible things about Ohio State. And we'd have Michigan football and various Michigan sports on TV. And, so yeah, I can certainly appreciate that story from somewhat of a personal level. So,
I tell her the reason that our marriage still works is because Ohio State keeps winning.
Well, somebody's got to keep winning. You know, Michigan's doing pretty well now. So,
Yep. But we've only lost one in the last like 10 years. So it kept the marriage together.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm so glad you found each other. And within the spectrum of sort of in preventative health and optometry school, you know, I guess what I mentioned getting this started, like I was really wanting to have you guys on to share parts of your story of some of the work that you've done, doing mission trips, actually, to really help give people at least access to healthcare, and specifically, you know, eye exams that otherwise wouldn't be able to receive them. And perhaps would love to, you know, get into that at some point in the podcast. If you feel like you want to start there now, I have so many things I'd love to cover, but I know you kind of alluded to creating a new a business model in order to practice your care, and not just seeing patients in a clinic. And you know, we talked a little bit beforehand that you were trying to find a way to facilitate being able to do these mission trips. So would love for you to either, you know, start with the trips and the care that you've done for overseas, and or you can start with sort of the business side of things. So free reign for you.
Free reign for me. So we can discuss the business side of things first, and then how it kind of plays into the mission side of things. And we created a business called iLove, and what we realized was in practice, I always felt limited in practice to the patient that was in front of me. And that's the case with any doctor. It's very hard to leverage yourself because you're one-to-one with a patient, and that's how you get paid. That's how you produce. I mean, that's how a practice makes money. And the struggle I always felt was I was destined to do something bigger and greater. And I loved patient care, but I felt like there was more out there. And so we created this company called iLove, and the goal of iLove is to end preventable blindness, which is the mission side of it. I'll get to that in a little bit, but with iLove, we realized that we could help a lot more people if we took care online and just educated people on things like dry eye. Dry eye is our main focus right now. Just educating them on macular degeneration and cataracts and just different ways you can heal these chronic conditions through preventative measures that are natural. What I feel like as a doctor, and I know some doctors will disagree with this, but I feel like that whenever a patient comes into our clinic, they give us a symptom and we give them a medication to cover that symptom. And I don't feel like that's the way that it should be done anymore. And we need to find out what's causing the symptom in the first place. And what I believe, and this is kind of going off track, but what I believe is that our body is in this constant state of inflammation due to the diet that we're eating, the lack of exercise. And what's happening is that this chronic inflammation is there your whole life, and then it starts showing up as symptoms later in life, like heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, dry eye, macular degeneration. And so we felt like we could make a bigger impact online than we could one-on-one with patients. And so we started support communities. We started a dry eye syndrome support community and started catering to that community, coming out with products that will help them naturally fix their dry eye, including education products. We have supplements, we have sprays for your dry eye, we have natural soaps, and we try to limit the amount of ingredients in anything we come out with, and we try to keep it to as natural as possible. And so like our spray has 3 ingredients, and our soap that you can use on your full body, including your hair, is 5 ingredients. And it's things like green tea and coconut oil and olive oil and tea tree oil. It's just natural products that have been used for centuries, but with the commerciality, if that's a word, of...
We could say it's a word.
Yeah, I like it. Of the U.S., you have big brands like Unilever and Johnson & Johnson pushing all these other chemically ridden, high profit margin products on you, where if we just went back to natural, we'd start to realize that we can heal the body from the inside out because your body wants to be healed. And you've heard of people being healed of cancer from just changing their diet. And that's what we preach, and that's kind of what we educate people on, is look at what you're eating. Even if you think you're healthy, you're probably not as healthy as you think. And you're probably eating something that's causing these symptoms and this low-grade inflammation, this hormone imbalance. And once you figure out the kind of the diet, that's when everything else will kind of turn around as well. You'll notice that your other ailments are going away too. So we focus on diet to change your dry eye symptoms, but in turn, you see arthritis disappear, cholesterol, high blood pressure, diabetes, all those, and patients live longer, they're happier, they're not as depressed, the depression goes away, and they pretty much go off all their medications. And so we focus on education around that, and then we give them products to help supplement that as well, hence why they're named supplements. But that's kind of how we run the business, and everything we come out with has to kind of go towards helping our current fans, or it has to go towards that mission of ending preventable blindness, which is the mission side of things. So before I dive into that, did you have any questions on that, or does that all make sense?
No, it really does, and it completely resonates. I was just listening to, had a recent sort of functional forum community, kind of a community level engagement presentation, and one of the big things they were talking about were the role of health coaches and health education. And one of the premier guys in this space when it comes to health education put it very simply. He's like, you know, if I make a really insightful, educational, one-minute video that's seen by 1,000 people, you know, I just exponentially increase my capacity of being able to share that information as compared to just seeing one person and telling him that for 1 minute. And he's like, I've, you know, in terms of efficiency and of my work, I've just, you know, it's like I said, it's exponential. And so realizing that in health education and being able to help other people, we need to think much bigger than what can be done in the clinic. And I completely agree with you. Like, I mean, I love being able to talk with people one-on-one and to work with them and to reveal some of the deep down root causes to their suffering. But it's just at the end of the day, you can only do so much. And so we have to try to expand out in health education and see there's other ways to help a wider audience, but at the same time, help the individual in the way that maybe you could do one-on-one. So I'm really glad that you're pursuing this space and, you know, are reaching quite a big audience and then expanding from there and being able to provide products that are catering to and follow those, that value system, those missions of specifically targeting and starting with wellness. And, you know, I sit back and one of the things that makes me so, you know, angry is maybe not the right word, but it upsets me to see some patients with, you know, diabetic retinopathy and, you know, end-stage diseases, and they're getting these really costly injections. One, it just looks painful, but, you know, these medicines that they're getting weekly injections for and just perpetuating, trying to prevent, put a Band-Aid on a process that the eye doctor who's seeing them isn't doing anything to really help the underlying diabetes. They're just trying to patch the leaky blood vessels. And it's just, I see that and it makes me sad. So to hear your passion and recognizing that that's just not the way that we should be practicing medicine really puts hope in my heart. So, yeah, thank you for pursuing the practice that you're doing. And
yeah, the cool part about this is the book I'm focusing on right now that I'm writing, it's all about healing your dry eye naturally with diet, but I can rewrite this book in less than a day and target it towards diabetics or high blood pressure. And it's the same stuff. It's just letting your body naturally heal itself from the inside out using diet, exercise, and lifestyle modifications, which aren't as hard as you think, because people think eating vegetables and fruits is boring, but it's not, because of how amazing you feel. And then once you go back to that pizza and you eat it for the first time, that once you've been on this diet for a while, you'll never eat pizza again because of how it made you feel. It makes you depressed. It gives you mood swings in it. Just makes you feel malaised and you just want to, you know, curl up and go to sleep after you eat a meal like that. But when I eat my green smoothies for breakfast and lunch, I can go all day long. I don't need a nap. I don't need to take a break. It's full of energy. And something else I do, this is completely unrelated to what I just said, but you kind of reminded me of this, is when I do work one-on-one with patients, I actually, if they do have dry eye, I have a specific dry eye email follow-up sequence that I put them in.
Yes, exactly. Funneling them into that greater support network. And
you got it. Yep. And so they come to my online company from my practice. But the most important part about that is it's an email every 3 days for probably close to 20 different emails. And it's just constant education. It's short little snippets that they can read every 3 days because they retain maybe like 5% of what you educate them on. But if you give them brochures and email follow-ups, that's huge.
Yeah, it's so, so wonderful. And so, I mean, I would love to, like I said, maybe get into how this has allowed you to want to expand your reach within, you know, our sort of the social media and, you know, the greater community, but how this has allowed you to expand your reach into these mission trips, and which you've already talked about, you know, really is this underlying mission of trying to end, you know, preventable blindness. So would love for you to talk about some of these trips, because they sound just absolutely life-changing and phenomenal.
Yeah, so these trips are truly something that if you ever get a chance to partake in them, reach out to me if you're interested in an optometry-related one or an ophthalmology-related one, because we focus on eyes, but we have dental ones. We have reading ones. So people that don't think they want to do a medical clinic, you can do a reading clinic. And every single one of these mission trips is by far one of the best things you can do in your life, because What we do with the business is, the mission of this business is to end preventable blindness. And so what we do is we take the profits at the end of the year, and we take the profits from iLove and we give it to our charity that we founded. It's called the iLove Cares Foundation. And the charity then uses the money for things like equipment for screenings. We're getting ready to buy a screening equipment so we can travel around the US and do screenings at schools and find, you know, problems with kids. And then we also use the money towards our mission trips in Jamaica. And in Jamaica, we do MASH style clinics, which are just pop-up clinics that we do. And we see about 2,000 to 3,000 patients in a week. And so that's usually what we see in a year here in the States. And so seeing it in a week is pretty fun. There's about 40 volunteers and only about 5 to 10 of them are doctors. So anybody can help, and everybody can help and should help, because we need your help. And those clinics are incredible. You're giving people the gift of sight, like I've always talked about, that I love. And these are some people that I've never seen before. So our mission of ending preventable blindness means that 700 million people are blind due to lack of glasses in this world. And so we're trying to put a dent in that, if not solve it by the end of our life. We thought we'd get to this stage in our life where we could focus this much on the mission by the age of 60. That was our goal. And we started doing it at the age of 32. And so this business online has enabled us to focus on our mission without sacrificing time, because time is our most valuable asset. And we're doing it almost 30 years before we ever planned to. So the impact that we're going to be able to have is going to be huge. With technology coming around, it's going to be even bigger. And then we're beyond excited about what we're going to be able to do with this business. And we're only 2.5 years old, which is even more exciting. The foundation is only about a year old, and it's already doing some fun things, and it's only going to get better from here.
It's really, I mean, quite unbelievable to hear that, and exactly what you just said. I mean, realistically, in your mind, probably thinking, yeah, we're going to have to wait till we're 60, 65, maybe this kind of post-retirement thing that we'll do, and we'll save up, and we'll have a strong foundation to do this kind of work. And you're already doing that and making such a huge impact. And I see it as well, you know, it kind of resonates with me, realizing putting my interests and efforts to creating business structures and aligning myself with other people of similar values to be able to increase our capacity to give, and seeing that, you know, acquiring resources and acquiring wealth is not inherently, doesn't have to be some selfish gain to, you know, supply some need that's, you know, truly not necessary. You can realistically structure a business and try to acquire wealth so then you can increase your capacity to give. And that's exactly what you're doing. And to me, I mean, that's what I think innovation and the future of business is supposed to be. And as a consumer, we're getting to the point now, and in the same way in healthcare, as we get out of traditional insurance models and people realize that they can go find a healthcare provider and pay them directly for the care that they actually want, and becoming an empowered consumer, is that we have the choice to decide what sort of businesses we support. And I think it makes sense to try to become, if that's what we want to do, have a business ourselves and clearly state our values so people can resonate with that and not feel like we're some selfish entity trying to just take people's money and kind of fulfill this need to have lots of cars or a big house or whatever, fulfill some sort of crazy American dream. And so, I don't know, I think it's something that I'm sure you've probably talked quite a bit about in some other podcasts and this idea of sort of innovation, structuring businesses. But I mean, I'm so humbled to hear and so grateful to hear that you're able to funnel these resources to kind of give back in a way that otherwise, if you were in a just typical clinic, probably wouldn't be possible, like you said, until 60, 65, 70, or, you know, ever possible.
Yeah. And I think what you said there hits on a good point is with our business in particular, and businesses that you're seeing from millennials and people our age, that you're seeing businesses that are started and based on these missions, where I think America is sick of the 80s and 90s mentality of, let's see how big we can make this business so we can all make a bunch of money. And that was the mentality of the 80s and 90s. And that's okay, because, you know, it's evolution. We all evolve. And this new evolved enterprise of creating a business around a mission is just huge. And being a company like ours, where we started and were founded on the mission, and everything we do is based on that mission. We were doing the mission before we even started the company. And so you know it's authentic. And the problem with the big brands today is they're trying to bring a mission into their company, and it's just not authentic. It's just, it's forced, and it's just they're trying to catch up. And that's the fun thing about
foundation on a foundation that's already there. Like, you can't infiltrate a mission if that's not the foundation. And that authenticity, I love that word.
Yeah, it's realistic. And when I go to purchase something, I don't care about the cost. I care about the mission behind the company. I don't want to tell somebody that I bought this watch because it was cheap and the company makes a lot of money. I want to say I bought this watch because every time I buy a watch, somebody in Africa gets employed, and you can tell a story behind the watch instead of just, you know, buying a watch.
Yeah. And I truly believe that. I mean, that's the evolution in our generation, and I think generations to come, is that awareness of what it means to purchase something material. And I'm trying as much as I can to minimize material wealth and the things that I need, truly need in my life to be happy. But realizing when I do, I can make a very informed choice of supporting missions, like you just said, and not ultimately needing to care about finding the quote unquote best value, cheapest thing, because it isn't important anymore. So, and maybe a complete sort of 180 turnaround. I'd love to maybe come back. We've kind of given some surface discussion to some of these topics you've talked about, dry eye and that being kind of your focus. But you've also, you know, you've talked about a lot of other concerns with the eye that you've seen and are addressing. And we'd perhaps love to get from you, what have been, you know, kind of the top three or four conditions that you are seeing the most, and then sort of dovetailed from that, what have you been doing from a lifestyle level or as supplements to help people with these conditions?
Yeah, so with the dry eye, we kind of discussed that in depth already. We promote a balanced diet and a very plant-based diet, is what I meant to say, not balanced diet, but a plant-based diet, and getting your body in a healthier state with diet. The supplements we have an omega-3 fish oil supplement, and we're actually coming out with an omega-6 and omega-3 vegetarian supplement as well. And those are just to supplement and get good fats into your body to help your body heal itself by creating better cells, pretty much. And because that's what your cell membranes are made out of, are good oils. And so you want to get more good oils into the body, which is going to help decrease all the symptoms that you're having with dry eye. We also have an eyelid spray and an eyelid cleanser that are pretty much all natural, organic, and they use very simple 3 to 5 ingredients, and that's it. And the goal with that is you're treating the eyelids, and your eyelids are responsible for keeping your eye comfortable because they have oil glands in them, and those oil glands release onto your eye. And if your eyelids aren't clean, then the oil doesn't get on your eye. And so we discuss a lot of preventative ways to keep that from happening. And so dry eye is probably one of the most common things that I see in my clinic, because I think it's because I also look for it a lot, because I ask a lot of questions, but a lot of doctors don't, because dry eye is something that's newer and we don't know much about it. And it's kind of this big, huge research bubble right now that's been going on for like 10 years. And before, we always just threw artificial tears on it, when in reality, artificial tears just cover up a symptom. They don't really solve anything. And so we're working on solving the problem versus just covering it up. So I think problem number two, actually I'd say this is problem number one, but I don't address it as much because people don't realize they're symptomatic for it. And that's blue light. And people don't realize the effects of blue light or even what blue light is. And blue light it's a natural light. It's the color blue. But what blue light can cause is macular degeneration in the eyes, which is the central part of your eye called the macula. It's when that area starts to degenerate and you lose your vision, your 20/20 vision. And so you lose that crystal clear vision. And that's what macular degeneration is. Where blue light can cause that, but I don't think that's as much of a concern of what blue light can cause. The bigger concern for me is what blue light's doing to our sleep and what it's doing to pretty much my generation and younger. We're constantly on computers and we're on cell phones and tablets and watching TV. and these screens are emitting blue light to our eyes. What this blue light does, just like the sun, when the sun comes up, it tells your brain to wake up, because the blue light talks to your brain and tells you to wake up. When the sun goes down, blue light is gone, and it tells your brain to start producing melatonin so you can get a good night's rest. And what's happening now is we're on these devices late into the night, right before you go to bed, and you're constantly being exposed to this blue light. And so your brain is being told to wake up, wake up, wake up, and you're not getting the melatonin production, which means when you put your phone away finally, when you're in bed, then it takes you another hour to get to sleep because you can't get to sleep because you have no melatonin production, and this blue light is causing that problem. And so what I recommend patients doing is get a pair of blue light blocking glasses. Those blue light blocking glasses, you can buy over-the-counter ones. We actually sell ones that have a plus 1.25 prescription in them. And that plus 1.25 is good for your computer or your phone.
So you can like kind of reading.
Yeah, they are reading glasses. So, and then we're actually coming out with another one in November of 2017, so about a month away, that are going to have, they're going to have no prescription in them. They're going to be blue light blocking on the inside. And then when you go outside, they're going to turn into sunglasses. And so they're going to be UV protective as well. And so we're really excited about that product. And I think that's going to make a huge difference with millennials because we're constantly on the computer. And my recommendation for that is, this is going to sound crazy to people that are younger than me, but turn off all your devices 2 hours at least before you go to bed. That means your phone, your computer, your TV, everything. And do something like read a hardback book, like a page.
Yes.
Book, and flip the pages. And what I also do is I wear blue light blocking glasses that have no prescription. I've already got the product that we're releasing next month, and I'm testing them out. And I wear them pretty much all day when I'm on the computer, but then I wear them especially after 5 p.m. because I want my body to start producing that melatonin production. And we start to turn down the lights, and we go to bed about an hour to an hour and a half before we actually go to sleep, and we just read books. And in our room, we have the soft white lights. We don't have those harsh daylight lights that emit a ton of blue light. You want to get the lights that don't emit blue light. And so blue light is a huge thing in my clinic. So that's kind of the top two. And then going back to kind of glasses, nearsightedness is becoming a huge problem in the world, and we can't figure out what's causing it. And this is something that I don't think diet can solve. So the studies that are going into nearsightedness right now are incredible, and the researchers are more intelligent than I. So, but they really just can't find a cause. And we think the cause is more computer work and less outside time and just more eye strain, because what we're seeing is in Asia, and Asian descent tend to be more nearsighted. I think it's around 70% of China is nearsighted. And so it's a crazy epidemic over there. And it's just getting worse. And so we can't figure out what's causing the increase in nearsightedness. We don't know what causes it, because we have some people getting it from the age of 8 to 12. And then like myself, I became nearsighted when I hit optometry school. And I'm not that nearsighted, but I'm just like a -1. And that just affects my nighttime driving. But we don't know what's causing adult onset nearsightedness like me. And we don't know what causes the kids' version either. So a lot of unknowns in the eye care space, but most disease, other than the refractive error like glasses, can be prevented with just diet.
Yeah, no, I've done quite a bit of kind of literature search myself too, looking at seeing those same statistics from especially some of the Asian countries with myopia or nearsightedness, and it's incredible to see. I mean, some people I've seen take pictures of, you know, 100 or so Japanese or Chinese individuals, and nearly every single one in the picture is wearing glasses. And I know some preliminary research has looked at some of that daylight, you know, exposure, looked at sort of total time outside. I know there's a couple of studies looking at kids, like who spent time indoors for recess or actually spent time outside, and rates of myopia. And I think that probably is somewhere a contributing factor, is this, you know, outdoor UV exposure, probably some contribution from sort of looking at screens that are basically, we're moving the focal point much closer to ourselves, and, you know, this far out gazing, you know, distance vision. And I think there's got to be something else epigenetically that we're seeing. So beyond even just genetics, but patterns of expression to potentially, the, you know, the development and changing shape of the eye. You know, I think I find myself on one hand quite lucky. I'm quite farsighted. And so I'm only making myself, by becoming more nearsighted, I'm getting closer and closer to zero. And I figure maybe by age 60, I'll like, you know, have perfect vision.
I'm sorry to tell you, but there are other effects in play there. So they balance out your need to become nearsighted. And I'm guessing you're about a +4 to a +6 based on your history.
And yeah.
You're going to probably be there your whole life, and it will actually get worse in your 40s and 50s.
Oh, man. You know, I was just hoping, but just shot that down. But yeah, so I think I'm now in like sort of the +5.5 range. Yep. Used to be even worse than that. So, so I think time will tell. And as people, we sort of go forward with some of the research into nearsightedness, you know, one of the other things I thought would be interesting to talk about, and if you have something to share, is I feel, you know, as we age, you know, cataracts are ubiquitous, and cataract surgery equally mm-hmm. ubiquitous. And, we see patients in the family medicine clinic who they're coming in for clearance for cataract surgery, which I understand. But just seeing, you know, people and they've, oh, I had cataract surgery. And there's some decent understanding of, you know, trauma and steroids and some other sort of, you know, iatrogenic causes. But I was curious to get your thoughts on, you know, why so many cataracts?
Now, the number one cause is age. I mean, we're living longer. So cataracts, the lens inside your eye is just a naturally degenerating part of your eye. Some things that can help prevent cataracts are, of course, diet and sun protection. And so wearing sunglasses when you're outside, good sunglasses, polarized sunglasses. And then also just eating a healthy diet, staying away from diabetes, UV exposure. When I see a cataract in a younger patient, like you were just saying, it's usually due to UV. So like a welder is going to get cataracts usually in their 40s.
Interesting.
And I see a lot of welders in my area because I'm in South Carolina. And then also diabetics. Diabetics tend to get any change in their body faster because their body's just degenerating and it's giving up. And that's what diabetes is essentially. But cataracts are normal because the lens inside your eye, it's very flexible when we're born. And what this lens does is it bends to see up close and it relaxes to see far away. And so you're constantly in the state of relaxing and bending, depending on where you look. Well, every day starting at age around 6 years old, you start to add layers to this lens. And as you add layers to it, it's getting thicker and thicker and thicker and thicker. As it gets thicker, it gets harder to bend. So you've probably heard of people in their 40s saying, I've never worn glasses, but now I have to wear readers and I can't extend my arms out far enough. That's because that lens is no longer able to bend as well. And so eventually what happens is that lens, as it's getting layer upon layer put onto it, it's starting to become cloudy. And so that clouding is a cataract. And so it continues to cloud until around the age of 60s to 70s when it becomes so cloudy that you need to get them removed. So to give you an example of cataracts here in the States, we usually remove them when somebody's seeing about 20/40 vision, which is about four lines above 20/20. To get them removed in a country like Jamaica, where we do our mission work, we have to wait until they're about 20/200 vision. And oh, so goodness. That's a lot more, 10 times worse than 20/20. It's actually not 10 times, but there's a logmar in there and I don't want to get into that. But yeah, so we have to wait a lot until it's a lot worse because we have the access to it here, whereas we don't down there. And so it's a little harder to get somebody a cataract surgery in a developing country, whereas it's easy here. And so we take them out earlier. But that's what a cataract is. Everybody gets them eventually. I think they'll find a cure for it. I think they'll be able to figure out a drop that will help keep the lens flexible and help keep the cataracts away. But I think they're doing some studies in animal studies right now. In regards to that, but there's nothing out there that's really concrete or showing promise yet. But that's kind of the route of cataracts and cataract surgery. The nice thing about cataract surgery is that you can take the lens out and you put a brand new piece of plastic in, and that new piece of plastic is your prescription, so you can see again.
Yeah, you know, I've heard, and you know, I was doing some of my ophthalmology rotations, you know, back in medical school, being able to, yeah, tailor the lens so that people hopefully wouldn't have to, you know, use readers or have sort of glasses after the surgery. It's not always the case, but and in that sense, it, you know, can be quite life-changing for folks. And so I see that as a great advancement, technology and Western medicine being able to do that. But I think at the same token, we also have to recognize, like you said, like perhaps we can make other advancements to make the surgery and the technology, you know, less necessary if we can, you know, find something to help prevent it. And so there's, you know, I'm sitting here, you know, on one hand, it's kind of like I see the comparison with, you know, the dermatologists who say, well, avoid the sun and put on sunscreen because we don't want you to get skin cancer. Now we're starting to realize, well, we need to get sun exposure, and not just for making vitamin D, but, you know, interestingly enough, it's, you know, increased survival with people who develop, you know, melanomas, and, you know, an increased or decreased risk with, you know, more sun exposure for some autoimmune conditions like multiple sclerosis. And so we can, you know, we look at that and say, well, on one hand, like, yes, I can see we're correlating exposure and the skin cancers, things like squamous cell skin cancers and basal cell skin cancers, but are we missing sort of the boat and needing to find the balance between using these and protecting your skin and being able to make vitamin D and get these other amazing compounds, nitric oxide from sun exposure. I see the same thing kind of with eyes, at least from what you talked about, is like, you know, on one hand, we want to protect them from excessive UV exposure and also protect them potentially from excessive, you know, blue light exposure, kind of disrupting our circadian rhythms. But we need some of that, you know, daylight exposure, some of that, you know, full light exposure when we're out in the early morning or throughout the day to entrain that circadian rhythm. So not necessarily wanting to be outside in sunglasses 24/7 and trying to find that balance. So I was curious if you can, you know, maybe tell listeners how you structure or tell people who otherwise don't have a specific concern. They're not, you know, sort of really at the end stage of, you know, developing cataracts, or what you tell them in terms of trying to balance the potential damages from excess UV exposure versus needing it to kind of entrain that circadian rhythm.
Yeah, I always recommend, I live in South Carolina, so there's no lack of sun here. It's it's sunny 24/7, and I tell people to wear sunglasses all the time just because I know they'll forget their sunglasses enough that they'll get enough UV exposure throughout the day and throughout their life here, because we literally have like 10 cloudy days a year, and that's when it rains. And the sun is just always out. It's always powerful. And what I usually recommend, like for myself, when I use sunscreen, I actually don't use sunscreen. I use like natural oils like jojoba oil and coconut oil, because those have kind of a natural SPF in it, and they kind of extend your time by like 10 minutes. But I usually tell patients the same as what a dermatologist would. You know, you want to get about 15 to 25 minutes of sun exposure a day, and that should be enough to get your vitamin D levels up and to give you that health benefit of the sun. I know it varies from patient to patient, just depending on health conditions, but you said on a healthy patient, yeah, I just recommend, you know, 15 to 25 minutes of sun. And there's, I read something the other day about sun gazing curing diseases, and don't ever do that.
Yeah.
Just don't look at the sun. I mean,
yeah,
the eclipse was like my worst nightmare. Yeah, the eclipse the other month, like, was my worst nightmare. I thought everybody was going to be blind.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And I'm sure too, I think you had a couple posts about the relative integrity of some of the glasses that were being, you know, sold as saying, you know, protective. And I saw some of them, you know, like $1, $2. I was like, I don't know about this. Like, this just seems kind of sketchy to me.
Yeah, there's certain companies you have to buy from that are the certain certification, and there are a lot of ones that were out there that were their certification from 2015. Which, would they work? Yes. Are they as good? No. And so they would still work, but you don't want to stare at the sun as long.
Yeah.
You don't want to stare at the sun, period. But
yeah. Well, I mean, it was. I mean, I guess in the southeast, you know, South Carolina, Georgia, I know it was nearly a full eclipse, and a lot of people had traveled down there to see it. We had a kind of a 75-80%. But I mean, still tons of people were out, and kids, you know, tons of kids going outside and to look at the eclipse. So I'm sure you're already counting down to the next eclipse to educate people to get
2019 in Chile.
Oh man. Well, you know, it's good on a Chile.
So we did have a full eclipse, and if you ever get a chance to see a full eclipse, it's probably one of the most incredible things you'll ever see. But if you go to YouTube and search hilarious eclipse, the video that I did is at the top. And okay. So you have to go watch that. Just type in hilarious eclipse and you'll laugh, because we didn't realize it at the time, but we had a family right beside us. This is completely going on a tangent, but we had a family right beside us and we didn't realize how crazy they were going until we got back to our house and played the video, and I edited the video, and they're hilarious and they're going nuts and they're screaming and yelling. And you just have to go to YouTube, hilarious eclipse. Our company name is iLove, so you'll see that as the video maker, and so you gotta check it out.
We're totally putting that link on the podcast page, and maybe even
it's worth it.
Embedding the video. That's gonna check that out myself. So, well, wonderful. Well, I guess to kind of bring us to a close, we've hit on a lot of big things here, and I've just been really, I mean, really in awe at what you've been doing so far, and quite such a young age with your wife. So. But would love to, kind of as a summary, give our listeners, both perhaps talked a little bit about what clinicians should be paying attention to, and as a patient or just, you know, a regular human being should be paying attention to for eye health. What would you say would be kind of your take homes for what we can do tomorrow to improve our overall health and kind of through that, the health of our eyes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the first thing is, develop a plant-based diet and try to eat plant-based diet for both breakfast and lunch. And if you must eat meat, leave it for dinner only. And you will be shocked by how much better you'll feel, and especially the lunch one. And because everybody gets that food coma after lunch, and if you eliminated meat from that diet and just did more like a salad or a green smoothie for lunch, that will be a huge difference in your output at work, and you'll just feel a lot better. And especially with you being a resident and having those long shifts, green smoothies could push you to new limits with those, because you won't get as tired as easily as if you ate meat, in my opinion. And so that's kind of take home number one. Take home number two is protect yourself from blue light. Get a pair of blue light blocking glasses. You'd be surprised by how much better you'll sleep when you wear those pretty much 5 hours before you go to bed, and get off your devices before you go to bed. So blue light protection. And then a third thing is probably going back to the UV exposure and just protecting yourself from that. Get enough of it to satisfy, but wearing polarized sunglasses is really going to help just keep the overall health of your eyes up.
Yeah. No, I have my, you know, $8-$9 blue blocking UVX glasses. I've had them for, goodness, I think 3 years now. They're not fashionable at all. So I would certainly love to maybe pursue whatever glasses you have as a secondary option. I mean, I have no, I don't hold back. I don't care about, you know, what I look. I kind of, you know, joke with my dad. They're quite fashionable. But I have my blue blocking glasses, and I've downloaded f.lux on my computer, trying to mitigate when I have to be on my computer late. And as part of my wellness plans with, you know, patients, I have a, you know, two specific things that we fill out together in the sleep section. One is, when do you need to be asleep by? And then counting back from there is, I call it technology lights out. When is technology away? And, you know, I've been telling people that sort of same, like 2 hours, you know, and at the very least 1 hour, you know, get and read a book, or, you know, get your eyes off of screens. And when you put it on paper, people are like, oh, wow. So to get 8 hours of sleep, I need to be, if I'm up at six, I need to be asleep at 10. So then technology has to be completely gone by nine. And I tell them I would rather have it be eight. And when they see that, then it actually clicks with them, like, now I know what I need to do, not just this sort of like idea of, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this and it could be hurting me. And like you mentioned earlier, it's kind of insidious. We're not completely aware of what the blue light's doing, in the same way of, you know, the way diabetes can develop. And it can be this sort of insidious process where there's not overt symptoms that are telling you that something's wrong, or that your sleep is getting significantly disrupted. So all of those things.
And the blue light, it's vital, and that's why we're coming out with a new pair next month, because the style of the blue light glasses are just horrid that are out there.
It's true.
And and ours are not going to have that kind of yellowish tint. They're actually going to be clear. And then when you go outside, they actually turn dark into sunglasses. And so they're more functional than just a typical blue light pair. And they're going to look cool. We're going to have black, orange, blue, pink, a bunch of different fun colors. And they're going to look kind of like that Wayfarer style. So they're going to look good. And that was kind of our point. The ones we currently have with the plus 1.25 prescription in them, they actually look good too. We have a lot of fashionable designs with them. And so we can put a link in your show notes for those too, just so people can check them out.
Yes, for sure. I mean, I'm already going to want a pair of these new ones when they come out. Because I do a lot of biking too, and I'm trying to protect my eyes from just debris and trash when I'm, you know, riding my bike. And so
the nice thing about biking is you're going in and out of the sun a lot. And so these don't get quite as dark as sunglasses. And when you get into those shadows, they'll actually lighten up for you.
Oh, wow.
So that will help you out. That will be nice for that too. Something I wanted to say towards your physicians that listen to this. I always tell people, like, when they're kind of your age, getting ready to come out into the real world or getting close to it, is that what you learned in school will make you a living, but what you learn after school will make you a life. And I say that because I'm on the brink of almost stopping practicing optometry in the typical sense. And the only reason I got to this point in my life at the age of 33 is because I never stopped educating myself after I got out of school. And it was the education that I got after school is what really created what we're doing for our life and what we're really passionate about. And so you can get to that point of happiness a lot faster if you just keep educating yourself and just keep growing.
It is so true. I mean, I try to live that by showing people, just having curiosity bleed from every part of my being, and showing them, you know, through my interest, my curiosity, like, this is what we should be doing. And sometimes I freak people out when I tell them, like, a lot of what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis and helping you, I didn't really learn in traditional medical school. And they're like, well, where did you learn it? I'm like, well, I got curious and did some reading and gone to some conferences and pursued some training because I knew it wasn't the whole story. So thank you for sharing that message, because I think the more and more that we hear it, I mean, it's perhaps something that we need to hear 10, 20, 30, 40 times before it really sinks in. And but I think you're a great example, having lived it and showing it. So yeah, thank you for
And then
sharing
one more thing for you as well. You are in the top 2% of people. That what I mean by that is you're ambitious. And the hardest thing for people like you and I is trying to get that ambition to other people, and it will drive you crazy. And I've finally let that go and realized that there's only 2% of people that are actually going to be as ambitious as you are, that want to do what you do. And getting yourself with those people and aligned with those people is the key. And I've kind of designed my life now to be just those people in my life. So the people I talk to, the people that I surround myself with, the people that I hang out with at conferences are those 2%. And you'll be surprised by, when you surround yourself with that 2%, how much your life will take off.
I believe it. I mean, we see it for how important community and social relationships, you know, that social network is for health. I mean, we're on sort of the more negative side of things, have been showing that, you know, an individual is more likely to be overweight or obese if their five closest friends are overweight and obese, or to engage in similar sort of more destructive habits. So, you know, surrounding yourself with ambitious, positive, you know, engaged, healthy people is, to me, a one-way ticket to living that life. And so I couldn't agree more, speaking to the choir here. So, well, Travis, this has been so fun. And I'm just so grateful that we had the opportunity to connect and for you to share some of these insights. And we've embedded quite a bit in the discussion about how people can follow you. I'll try to have as many of these links on the podcast page, but I'll give you this sort of space now to the end to let people know and all the ways that they could kind of get in touch with you through, you know, social media or through the missions, and but anything that you'd like to share now for people.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And our website to purchase any of our sunglasses, supplements, or the reading glasses that we talked about is ilovethesun.com. And it's actually E-Y-E, lovethesun.com, and not the letter I. And so ilovethesun.com is our website. And we're also on Amazon as well. So you can search I Love Sunglasses or I Love whatever, and you'll find us on there. The best way to connect with me is on Facebook. That's pretty much where I hang out. That's where my communities are. And so I'm in the Dry Eye Syndrome Support Community. So if you go to Facebook and just type in Dry Eye, we're at the top. And that's just because the members are awesome. And we have about 2,700 members, and it grows by about 10 per day. And so it's an incredibly engaging community. And if you have any questions about eye health or dry eye in general, we answer them there. We do a Facebook Live every Sunday at 5 p.m. to answer questions about eye health. And then on Facebook as well, we have a website called Business Igniters. So you can search for that on Facebook. And that's kind of our mastermind / business group. That there's four of us in there, and we just help each other grow. And then finally, Dr. Travis Ziegler, you can search for me, and that's my public profile. That's my coaching page. So you can hire me as a coach to help grow your e-commerce brand if you want. And yeah, that's the three best ways to find me.
Well, awesome. And I totally, like I said earlier, I'm going to get one of these new pair of glasses when they get out. And I would love to have you back in the future to talk a little bit more about, you know, your practice and some of the missions. And if, you know, if, certainly when the book comes out, would love to dig into that. So,
yeah, I'd love that. That'd be great.
Well, thanks again, Travis. And until next time, keep doing your amazing work. And I'm sure our paths will cross in, you know, the physical sense in the future. So, so thanks again.
I appreciate what you're doing, Rob. Thanks.
Thank you for your presence and willingness to receive a new narrative, a passionate perspective, and perhaps a deeper sense of connection with our collective purpose. Please share this podcast with any and all that you believe will benefit from its intention to relieve one's doing and engage one's being. Please share your comments about the conversation on our podcast page and leave a review in iTunes so that the voices in this space can spread to all ears ready to receive it. Music credit goes to Dillingham for their song Vessel. Remain open, stay curious, and forever be love. You walked on fire. In the know you tried.